This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
It's essential prerequisite work for communities to be self-sufficient and look after themselves. We're not going to be bringing our food from all over the world. We're not going to have oil to do this. That's a huge threat to people. And whether it's an aggressive defence of it or whether it's just a knee-jerk reaction, I don't know. But whatever way, a decentralised, low-carbon economy is a huge threat for a lot of people.
Welcome back to season two of the Tread Lightly podcast. If you thought season one was just about recycling, hugging trees, think again, because this time we're taking things up a notch, talking about everything from how community shapes our planet to why faith might just have something to say about the environment, and even digging into the quirks of human behaviour.
I think we all realised quite quickly that the environmental conversation is way too big to keep simple. So we're diving in headfirst at the deep end. Buckle in, because this season we're going to get real. Let's go.
Let's do this. This is the episode where I, Kaylee, go and absolutely bawl my eyes out.
It's an incredible episode with a guy called Phil Laurie from an organisation called Christian Climate Action, who follow the example of the social justice movement of the past and carry out acts of public witness, non-violent protest and civil disobedience to urge those in power to make the change needed. Buckle up for this episode. It's simply incredible and we really hope that you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back to this podcast where we get to speak to Phil Laurie from Climate Christian Action. I have feel like I've been waiting so long for this episode. Thank you so much for coming down to the studio.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Yes.
Oh, no, yes. I'm excited. So I'm not going to do an introduction for you because I feel like I don't want to steal your thunder.
Okay.
Tell us, Phil, why are we talking to you today and where are you from?
Well, okay, well, I'll introduce myself first. I'm Phil Laurie. I'm a father of three. I'm a retired engineer. I've been active in environmental politics since about 2016, 2017, something like that. It's a bit difficult to tell now. It seems so long ago. And I'm involved in a number of groups, quite a lot involved with Christian Climate Action. I definitely take a lot of direct action, do a lot of work on the streets, campaigning work on the streets, but also do a lot of other stuff as well, which I can tell you about later on, where we try and persuade people. At Christian Climate Action, we try and run the full gamut. So we do everything from petitions and letter writing, and then we go through vigils, we go through taking part in demonstrations, right the way on to just taking non-violent civil disobedient action, right up to the point of arrest. So as Christian Climate Action, we are a group of a community of people who come together to try and raise the profile of the existential problem that we're facing. Quite why we should need to raise the profile of an existential problem. Yeah. I actually find very difficult, but we do, and we are. And so we're the Kent branch. There are branches all over the country, and we're a national group as well, and we do things nationally and locally.
When did Christian Climate Action start?
We grew out of Extinction Rebellion. We're part of Extinction Rebellion, and we're not formally part of Extinction Rebellion anymore, but we're very closely allied with Extinction Rebellion. So when Extinction Rebellion started and a group of Extinction Rebellion activists came together and realised that there was a need for a faith-based Christian organisation, that they came together and formed
it. So it's a faith kind of branch of Extinction Rebellion.
Absolutely, yes.
So how did Phil, as an engineer, end up being in this space?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. How I ended up here was, I was an engineer and I'm very, very deeply involved in ornithology, natural history, things like that. And I thought that actually I was getting quite well advanced in my career. And I thought I might like to change what I did. So I started doing a course at the Open University with the idea of moving into conservation work. And part of it, we had to do an introductory course. The first year was an introductory course. And part of that was a climate change module. And we did the climate change module. And it kind of changed everything for me, because I got to the end of it and I went to my tutor and I said, I'm sorry, am I missing something here? this is really serious. And she said, yes, it is that serious.
Wow.
And why aren't people
going mad? Around?
Absolutely. Yeah, and, yeah. And so that's, and after that, my degree with the Open University basically became climate change.
Oh, did it? Okay. So, you completely changed your path.
So it changed my path. So I spent 6 years studying climate change.
Wow.
Yeah?
So that wasn't your plan?
That wasn't my plan at all. No, that was not my plan at all. I mean, I did other things as well, but the core of it was studying various courses on historic climate change, Whoa. Current climate change, things like that. And getting to understand what it is, how the models work, that's how it is. And then completely flukily, I bumped into some people who were the very start of Extinction Rebellion. And I thought, these are my people.
These are my people. You found your tribe.
Absolutely. And so ever since then, I've been involved in Extinction Rebellion in one way or another. And now I divide my time between Extinction Rebellion, Just Stop Oil, and Christian Climate Action. But I'm a Quaker, and my faith is the base for all those.
That was what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you a little bit about how your faith kind of brought you to those particular organisations and what part this plays.
So I'm a Quaker, and Quakers are an activist faith. We believe in discernment followed by action. And so that's how I am where I am.
And that was how you were long before this as well?
I was on the journey that way. I was actually a Roman Catholic for a long time, an active Roman Catholic, and I was heavily involved in the Roman Catholic justice and peace movement.
Wow.
And so it was a journey, but my relationship with the Catholic Church was getting more and more tenuous, and they were getting more and more uncomfortable with the kind of things that I was doing. And then I met the Quakers, and the Quakers seemed, again, just like Extinction Rebellion were, they were...
And your people.
They were my people, yeah.
And did that happen at roughly the same time or separate?
They're about 2 years apart.
Okay.
Yeah, so I started climate activism first and then moved into being a Quaker.
That's really fascinating.
And, yeah. As I say, whatever I do, I try and use my faith as a grounding for what we do. If we can go into that a little bit later, if you like, but that's
well,
that's
I was going to ask you actually, because we do often have a lot of people asking us around what is the basis of that. So what is the argument for, you know, you saying I want to do this because I believe in this, and how does that link with your faith, and how do you, you know, for people that have no faith or are exploring, how could you answer that maybe?
Well, I mean, it's just, for me, it's a question of contemplation, talking to people about things, of sitting in silence with the issues. And also we have a process where we take our concerns and we take it to our meeting and we ask them for a direction. And I did that, and I very firmly did not get a direction, to be quite honest with you. But having said that, post-action, I got a very firm direction, very firm support in what we're doing. I just don't think people quite understood what we were doing at the time and things like that. So I'm a member at Faversham meeting now, and so they are absolutely support and take part in the actions that we do. And as I say, we have processes by which we get support for what we do from
and
our,
so your,
from our
your peers within the Quaker community are kind of on this journey with you, and they been led by you?
I wouldn't say led by me, but I would say I think they're a bit scared by me, if it's truth, because it's a difficult thing being an activist, being arrested, going to court, you know, and I have to say I've also been to prison for it, so it's a difficult thing.
Are you happy to share a bit more about that?
So how can I say, yeah, so I believe that we need to change what we're doing. We need to change the direction. I've just, on the train here today, I was reading in the paper today that India has, and you can read it in The Guardian today, there's an article, and it's 50.5 degrees in Delhi at the moment. They're running out of water. The water they've got is coming out, boiling out of the taps. We can do something about this. We can change the way we're doing. And for better or for worse, we've got a political establishment that are not addressing these issues. They're just not addressing it. It's not being addressed in the newspapers. It's not. So the only way of bringing these issues to the front is to do actions that will get you into the newspapers and get. So, for instance, we sat down in the road outside of an oil depot for 9 days.
Whoa.
And not me, you know, I did it 2 days and other people did it.
Oh, you're taking shifts, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't even in the papers.
No way.
And you know, it didn't even get in the papers. We go to a petrol station on the M25 and close a petrol station on the M25.
No one knows about it.
No. We were in 6 newspapers the next day because it was on the M25.
Oh, because you disrupted the M25. Because it was on the M25.
Yeah, right, okay. Absolutely. And then unless you're actually involved it in this country, the legal things people are doing now, the injunctions that are in place to stop protests going, so they took an oil company took an injunction outside of an oil depot,
mm-hmm.
and which said that you couldn't protest outside. This is a private company stopping us protesting on public roads. And so we went and broke that injunction. And because we broke that injunction, we were sent to prison.
But that's why you went to prison.
That's why I went to prison for it. I didn't go to prison for any. I went to prison because I broke an injunction that was taken out by a private company.
That's insane.
It's absolutely insane. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I was going to ask you about that. Like, how do you not be absolutely incensed and completely mad by that sort of stuff, where you're painted, I guess, as a picture, yep, it is by a certain way by the media, and yet you're fighting justice, but you're having injustice done to yourself. How do you not just want to scream and shout and shout? Maybe you do. Maybe.
Well, no, this is all part of it. You see, because the if you believe what you read in the Daily Mail, I'm a hooligan.
Yeah,
plainly, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a pacifist.
Yeah.
I'm a father of three.
And you really care about these people in Delhi.
Absolutely. I care about it. I care about the future of my children.
Yeah. Yeah?
And if we were having any kind of sane debate about it, I mean, today the temperature is 50.5 degrees in Delhi. The bodies are mounting up in the morgues. And we've got two political leaders that are talking about who is the best at football. Yeah.
Same.
What kind of sane world is that? Are we living
getting
in?
Getting so distracted by whether oil can get out the depot or not, and whether you've blocked the M25.
So we've got to have these debates, though. You know, if the politicians could just quietly get on with their own little debates and things like that, someone's got to stand up. And in Quakers, bringing it back to faith, we have our five testimonies.
Yep.
One of them is tell the truth.
Interesting.
So that's what we do. We just tell our truth. And just keep coming back to it and back to it and back to it. And that's eventually how we're going to make progress with this.
But do you mind me asking, when you were in court and they were pushing these charges against you, how were the kind of legal team in terms of defending this? Did you feel that there was a sense of injustice, or are they just kind of going through the motions and they haven't caught up yet?
It's absolutely incredible. Unless you've been to court and seen it, they now have this list of phrases that you're not allowed to use. So they've banned us from talking about our motivation in court.
I heard about this.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about this.
So there's a judge called Judge Reed, and he started off saying that actually your motivation for taking part in your actions is not relevant to the offence.
Is this only in the case of climate action, or would this be the case if you were committing a crime because you were at risk? Are you not allowed to talk about it in any context, or just in this context?
Just in this context. Well, but having said that, they're doing it with us. Why can't they do it with other people? This is a big thing. So we have another campaign that we call Defend Our Juries. I don't know if you've seen the signs where we just sit outside. Yeah. Okay. And Trudy Warner, who's an absolute heroine, she started it off. She was charged and brought to trial a couple of weeks ago, and she was acquitted for the charge of insulting the judge. I sat outside a court in London, and Judge Reed issued a summons, and we were interviewed for perverting the course of justice.
Why? For sitting outside?
Just sitting outside with a sign that reminded the jurors that they have a right to acquit as they see fit. Yeah. And, you know, so, and let me tell you, perverting the course of justice is life in prison, potentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is quite serious stuff. But as I say, Trudy was found not guilty, although the prosecution are going to appeal that now. You know, this goes to the core of our democracy.
Yeah.
Just put it this way. If I was walking along a street and I saw there was a fire in the house and I banged on the window to try and get people out and they didn't hear me for whatever reason, they didn't have their headphones on or something like that, and I broke the window in order to get them out from the fire, then I wouldn't expect to be prosecuted for breaking the window because it's an urgent thing. And it's very similar to what we're doing. We're breaking the window to let people know there's
analogy.
A fire.
That is
there's
a such fire. A good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just happens that the next week I'm coming down the street again and seeing a fire in a house again and having to do it again. So we've got to do it. You know, we've got to keep going. You know, these people are not being safe. So we've got to, you know, and my children do not have the future that I worked for them to have.
What's the motivation, do you think, to keep you guys quiet?
The motivation, I think, is that some people feel that they've got a lot and they realise that if we go to a world that's going to be have a sane future for the children, it's going to be a very decentralised world. It's going to be one where people have control of their own futures. It's not going to be one where big oil companies dominate things. It's not going to be one where big multinationals dominate things. It's going to be where people provide for themselves. People like the work that you're doing in Raynham. It's essential prerequisite work for communities to be self-sufficient and look after themselves. We're not going to be bringing our food from all over the world. We're not going to have oil to do this. That's a huge threat to people. And whether it's an aggressive defence of it or whether it's just a knee-jerk reaction, I don't know. But whatever way, a decentralised, low-carbon economy is a huge threat for a lot of people. And they're kind of zoned out from that.
They're kind of zoned out from the other bad side of it, though. I guess they see they've got some things to lose. Yeah. But surely there's lose for them.
Absolutely.
Are you tired of the same old chat about saving the planet? You know, like the reduce, reuse, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time to shake things up because season two of the Tread Lightly podcast is here and we're diving deeper than your recycling bin.
This season, we're talking about community, faith, and yes, even why humans behave so weirdly sometimes when it comes to conversations about the environment.
Oh my gosh, they do. But there's no boring lectures here. So just real talk, tough questions and a little bit of banter along the way. Because let's face it, we all need to lighten up when we're trying to save the planet, right?
So if you're ready to stop tiptoeing around some of the big environmental stuff, get real and join the conversations. Come Tread Lightly with us.
Catch season two of the Tread Lightly podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, like now.
Bringing it back to Christian Climate Action and my, myself, but we have people who would never go out and get arrested, and they are just as much part of the organisation as those of us that do go out and get arrested.
I guess some people just can't, right?
Yeah, some people can't. Some people, it's just not their thing. Yeah. So as I say, in Kent, the third Saturday of every month, we do a vigil in the centre of Canterbury. We have vigils all around the country. We take part in on the 22nd of June. There's the big march to restore nature in London. So we're taking part in that. We take part in lots of other stuff, and we do self-organising groups, organise actions as well. So we're not all about breaking the law. We're a fully fledged campaigning organisation. And also, but it's also a good way of challenging your faith, of being with like-minded people who will stretch you, you know, and our meetings are very stretching, and you will meet people who've done things and who thought about things in ways you couldn't possibly have considered.
But that's so healthy,
it is,
isn't it?
Absolutely,
it's so healthy. If you are going to just constantly sit with people at your table that are like you, think like you, are not going to challenge you, are not going to make you stop and think about what you're doing, then you're not ever going to grow, are you?
No.
Just as a human being, you're not going to do that. And so we're not sat at a dining room table right now, but this would be like a perfect kind of idea, is to just, bring people to the table to kind of have really difficult conversations. And we have done in series one, had, people say things that's made me definitely go away and like relearn and question and pray about stuff in a completely different way, because I don't have all of the answers. And I guess that's what we always say when we do this podcast, is there is not one person who has the answer to this, right?
No.
And I guess one of my questions to you is, could you do this if you didn't have your groups of people, your Quaker group and your XR group and your CCA group? Could you do it if it was just on your own? Or actually, does it only become sustainable in a one sense because you have got other people that you can do that with and you can grow and learn with in a safe way? Does that make
Sense.
It does. It's absolutely essential, and the community is absolutely, and support from your community is absolutely essential. And yes, people do things on their own with small groups of individuals, but you know, we had for instance last week we had a group of Quakers who were in court for protesting at an arms fair in September last year. They protested at an arms fair, and they were. And it was to do with the Quaker peace testimony, because we're pacifist, and it was to do with that, and they were taking action against
them. Arrested.
They got arrested for it. But we had Quakers outside the court, Quakers inside the court, just walking with them, being with them.
Wow.
And just went into the court, everyone took a Quaker moment of silence, and we just had the court in silence while we did the Quaker moment of silence, just as a moment
That's
of
powerful.
Silence. It's very powerful, and they were found not guilty as well. So
what a great testimony.
Absolutely. And then in the evening we went and had a group meal together, and you know, and it's the joint action, and it's the caring for one another and being with one another and walking alongside one another, and we don't all do everything. We let people come to their own conclusions about what they want to do, and I try not to criticise people that do things that don't want to do things that I do, and they try not to criticise me.
You've created a safe space, haven't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I can give an example. So we came to the big one last year, and we joined CCA. We could have joined any group there. There were hundreds and hundreds of groups, right, that joined the big one, which was the big protest last April. Mm. And we went, and there was people with no faith and some. Yeah. And I don't think I quite understood how many people CCA would bring together.
Yeah.
They had a beautiful service in a church, and we got there a little bit just before it started. We were outside in the garden because there was no room. It was bursting, which that is beautiful. And my reflection was when I came and joined a debrief afterwards, because I really wanted to share with you that you created such a safe space for people that had probably never taken action before, but that you would welcome them in such a way that made them feel like they could put their voice to something and know that they could come with their children and that they could come just as they were, right? And there was this moment, I will never stop telling people about this, and Liz is smiling because she knows exactly what I'm going to say. There was a moment where we were stood outside the Shell HQ, and there was about 1,400 that day Christians singing Amazing Grace. And it was the most transformative, amazing experience that I had ever had, that I've never had in a church building before, ever. Ever. It brings tears to my eyes just here, like thinking about it. It was so beautiful. So beautiful. And you've been able to be a part of that, create that for people. It's just, I'm so sorry I'm emotional, but it was just so lovely. And you're a part of that, of being able to create that space for people. So I think people listening to this podcast, if they hear, you know, people getting arrested and taking this action, actually, I want them to remember that there is space for everybody at your table. And that's what's just so wonderful and amazing. So I'm going to stop now.
Well, thank you for that. That was an amazing moment. And if I would just add that, if you are sitting at home and listening to this, read the news tonight about, or go to the Guardian article about what's going on in Delhi. And if you feel the pain, feel that this is needless, that we can do something about this, going out and taking action at whatever level is cathartic. Mm. Yeah, it's the way of releasing the pain and the self-examination that goes with that, and the community that goes with that. It really is not what you think it's going to be.
Yeah,
it's going to be very. Totally. It's going to be very different from what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And you will be welcomed, and you will be part of a community, and you will grow, and you will only need to do what you want to do. There will be no pressure on you to do anything you don't want.
Yeah, that's so lovely. I honestly could sit here and talk to you for hours. Thank you so much for giving up your time to come and share this with us. And I hope that you would feel welcome to come back again and tell us more about your journey and your story.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for helping us understand.
Well, thank you. And hopefully one day we'll see you at one of our meetings.
100%. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
that's it for today's episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and maybe, like Kaylee and myself, even picked up a new perspective along the way.
If you did, do not keep it to yourself. You need to give us a like, rate the podcast and share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And of course, follow us on all of our social media, which is hilarious because we are on LinkedIn, TikTok, oh my gosh, Facebook and Instagram. And you can also stay in the loop for more episodes and updates. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, keep treading lightly.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.